Well, maybe we can begin our meeting. Perhaps we'll just wait a minute or two if there are any out in the hallway that Well, I'll call our meeting to order. My name is Tom Berger, and this is the Alaska Native Review Commission. And I think you know that I've been asked by two international Native peoples organizations to conduct a review of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971. To do that, I've been going all over the state of Alaska this year and holding meetings like this in villages in every region to find out what people like you think, to see what you have to say about the land claims settlement, about the corporations, about 1991, about the question whether or not you intend to sell your shares, whether the land that was transferred to Native people under the settlement should be taxed, about Native self-government and sovereignty and subsistence. All of these questions seem to be linked together. And everywhere in the state that we've gone, people have been talking about these issues. So we decided it would be a good idea here to come here to Holy Cross so that we could invite people from Holy Cross to give their opinions, to have their say about the land claims, and to invite people from Envik and Shagaluk and Grayling to come in today as well. Maybe I should begin by thanking Mayor Angela Dementiev for inviting us here. On behalf of the city. And I think I should also mention that we were invited by the fourth and fifth graders at the school who wrote me a couple of very nice letters, and so we decided we should come and see what these fourth and fifth graders have to say. I don't know whether they're going to be around today or not. We've already heard evidence from very well-known citizen of Holy Cross. When we started our hearings back in February, we began with hearings in Anchorage, and Martha Dementiev of Holy Cross came and she spoke at those hearings, and we were all very pleased that such an outstanding person would have been willing to come to Anchorage to speak. Maybe I could introduce the people that came with me. This lady is my wife, and she will maybe take one or two photographs, one or two pictures later today, if you don't mind, just so that we have some photographs of Holy Cross and of the meeting here today. You know Mary Kenswick, who's been here for a few days to help to organize the meeting. And this is Jim Sykes, who is our sound man. He is taking everything down on tape so that it can be typed up and transcribed, and there will be a permanent record kept of what you say. And the reason for that is because when I finish going around the state at the end of the year, and I've been to as many villages as I can get to, I'm going to write a report about the land claims and the corporations and sovereignty and subsistence, all of these important questions. But I want it to be based on your evidence, on what you say at these meetings. So when my report is completed, I will send it back to you, and I'm going to send that report to everybody who gives evidence at this meeting today, because I want it to be based on what you have to say at this at this meeting. Now, when you give evidence, I hope you'll come forward to this microphone here and speak into the microphone. I know everybody can hear you anyway, but it means that if you speak into the microphone, everything will be taken down and recorded and will be part of the permanent record of the commission. And we will type up what evidence is given here today and send it back to the city and the other institutions, the Village Corporation and the IRA Council. Now, I hope that we can carry on today with this meeting until about 6 o'clock, and then we'll adjourn. I understand this to be a potluck supper, and we thank you very much for inviting us to join you in the potluck supper. We'll start again tonight at 7:30, and there's been a request that we set aside some time right after supper so some of the young people can give evidence. Maybe we can do that after supper at 7:30, let the young people start off at that time. For this afternoon, maybe we could ask the people from out of town to go first if they wish, since they may want to get a flight back later tonight, I don't know, and we want to suit their convenience. So if the people from Envik and Shagaluk and Grayling want to go first, I'm sure that'll be fine with all the people here from Holy Cross. So the meeting is really for you to tell me, to put on the record your views about the land claim settlement, the corporations, subsistence, 1991. Maybe I should say that under the under ANCSA, under the land claim settlement, the shares in the corporations can be transferred in 1991. That is, you can sell your shares. And that means if enough people sell their shares in the corporations, outsiders, non-native people, will gain control of the corporations, and that would mean that they would gain control of your land. So the question whether you're going to sell your shares in 1991 is a very important one. When Congress enacted the land claim settlement and provided that native people in Alaska should receive 44 million acres, they didn't actually give the land to you. They gave it to the corporations, the regional corporations and the village corporations. And they gave you shares in the corporations. Well, those shares can be sold in 1991, and that's why 1991 is an important date, because outsiders can try at that time to take over the corporations and can try to take over the land. Also, after 1991, the land becomes taxable. The state could impose a tax on the land, and that is a very important question. Also, a lot of people around the state have told us that they're concerned because the land claim settlement doesn't give shares to the children born since 1971. That is, the children born since 1971 may inherit their parents' shares, but they have no right to be enrolled as shareholders in their own right. Well, I'm not trying to make this complicated. I didn't invent the land claim settlement. Congress did. And now the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, which is an international organization of Eskimos from Alaska, Canada, and Greenland, have asked me to come and to hold these meetings around the state. And the World Council of Indigenous People, which is an international organization of Indian people from North and South America, have also asked me to come and to listen to what people have to say about the settlement. There are other countries where there are Indian people and Eskimo people, and they are starting to settle their land claims, and they want to know how your land claim settlement worked out. They want to know whether they should enter into the same kind of land claim settlement that you have, or whether they should learn if you made some mistakes and profit by them. But my main job is to come here to listen to what you've got to say, and then next year I'm going to write a report about the land claims based on what you say. and that report will be for Native people in Alaska to use to plan their future and to make representations to Congress if they decide that they're going to do that. So I've talked long enough, and we can now begin the meeting. And as I say, if the people from out of town would like to go first, that would be fine with me, and we can proceed in that way.
First, I'd like to welcome all my friends here. And we're all here for a common cause today. We're quite concerned about the future of our generation and resources. And I would appreciate you to bear with me my personal opinion. I stand for correction. And mainly, I would appreciate support. If this is a feasible enough, feasibility that would apply to our problems. I will be honest with you, I have a little problem with my in remembering things due to a couple of strokes, that's personal. So bear with me, so I read from some notes that I've put down here. What I was endeavoring to do was to, we've had enough testimony, I've read the draft form of how the native land claims was negotiated and the form of the corporations. That's all over water over the dam. What I'd like to talk about is where we are today. What is the result of the native land claims to benefit the native? I am native. I am concerned. Bear with me when I try to express myself, and like I repeat again, these are my personal opinions. But what I've seen is that the native land claims, first of all, from which we know that the majority of us people didn't know what was going on. We had no input whatsoever. Just a few so-called native leaders got together and went down there and negotiated native land claims, which up to a point was the best they could do, but those same people did not have the experience. They did not really, you know, have to live a subsistence-style life. They went away to high school and learned how to eat other foods, with nothing wrong. So in a lot of issues, they did not consider doing that land claims act. And I get the feeling as time goes by that it's just a great federal land experiment with the Alaskan-born natives. They knew exactly what they were doing when they came out with these proposals and the land claim itself. Past experience from down lower 48. They were up here not to make that great mistake again. They fired a little black powder and shot in the lower 48, a few bows and arrows flew back and forth, and that settled the issue. Well, the way they're doing it with us here will be with a stroke of a pen. They have got proficient at that type of thing. I'll go on with. We are here, Alaskan-born natives, as the Land Claims Act of 1971. First, we elders were never considered in the act. We were used as a number, also the after 1971 children. Children that don't have any inheritance to look forward to have none. Elders and children after 1971, we are alienated from all the benefits. Second, the corporations are not the answer. Some smaller village corporations are near bankruptcy. Some have already gone bankrupt financially. We received just one dividend from Doyon so far. Third, the majority of the shareholders benefits nothing in order for the corporation to survive. The expertise are hired. Consultants, land specialists, lawyers. These are the people that are lining their pockets at the expense of us natives. As a native, I am deeply concerned in the future of our native people, the future generations. And I kind of like the idea, but there's options or some shortcomings in sovereignty rights, which would be one way to solve our problem and the land issue and court system. Of course, that's another issue I'm getting on to, but I think that after reviewing and looking over all the past experience we've had in this land issue, to protect our lands from creditors, selling of the land, if we could have our sovereignty rights, then we can control our lands better and develop our lands ourselves rather than somebody else. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Johnson.
How do you do, ma'am?
Welcome to Holy Cross. I just have a few things that I was concerned about. I'm speaking for myself and I'm probably other people too, that for my grandchildren, like I have seven of them, and just one of them was enrolled. And the oldest is 21 now, but they're all eligible to be enrolled. But that at that time, when the Native Land Claim thing came in, we were living in Anchorage, and everybody went to a grocery store and the hallways and different places where they had booths open to sign up. Well, I told my daughters, don't sign up unless I'm with you, you know, so I could tell them how much Native they are. They didn't even know, you know. So they went and signed up. When they signed them, they were not eligible for it, and they are eligible for it. And so I was wondering how we could, you know, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. I talked to a lot of other people too, said that at that time they didn't know. And so here is all these kids that are eligible and haven't signed up.
Why did they say they weren't eligible?
Because they said they had to be a fourth, you know, and they were a fourth.
Oh, I see.
But they didn't, the ignorance of their parents said they weren't, you know, they were less than a fourth.
Oh, so they weren't signed up?
No. Well, but I've talked to a lot of people and they said that, You know, there is a lot of them like that.
Yeah. Well, we've run into that kind of thing in other places. The rolls are closed, and one of the questions, this darn thing gets complicated, but one of the questions is whether the rolls should be open now,
mm-hmm.
so that all the people who weren't enrolled through a mistake
mm-hmm.
could be enrolled. That's one question. Then the other question, of course, is whether the people who were born too late should now have a chance to
yeah.
be enrolled. And then, of course, there are other people who say, I think quite a few people around the state have said, look, the best way to handle this is to turn over the assets of the corporations to the tribal governments or the IRA councils or the traditional councils, and then they can decide mm-hmm. who belongs to the who's entitled to be a member of the tribal council or the IRA council, and then these people who were left out can get back in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm grateful to you for bringing the problem
mm-hmm.
to my attention again.
Yeah, because we're not the only ones.
Yeah.
Another thing I was wondering about are if the corporation lands would, what do they do about like leasing or selling? And if they did sell to someone that belongs to the corporation, if they have other ways of when you die, do they sell it back to the whoever is in the corporation or in that same corporation, or do they just, it falls back to the corporation, but not in the family?
Well, if the corporation sells some of its land to somebody, let's say the corporation sells land to you,
mm-hmm.
well then normally that's your land. And when you die, it goes to your children if you decide to leave it to your children. It doesn't go back to the corporation.
Oh.
Now, then there's the shares in the corporations, which represent your ownership in the corporation and its assets. And when you die, which, God forbid, is a long way away, but you could leave your shares to your children or your grandchildren or your aunt or anybody you wanted to. That's the way that works, but the money that was received under the settlement, $962.5 million, was received by the corporations, just as the land, the 44 million acres, was received by the corporations, and they have the right to invest the money or to develop the land, and that's why normally an individual Indian or Eskimo person didn't receive any land under the settlement, and there were some distributions of money made, and sometimes dividends are paid, though not as often as people would want, I gather.
Mm-hmm. Also, I'd like to see where are the corporations kind of give a little thought and give money to our elders while they're still alive. You know, they're not going to live forever like my mom. She's 89 years old, and she hasn't benefited from it. And, you know, I think that all the elders should get maybe some lump payment or monthly payments of some kind, just to make them know that they could be enjoying it now. I don't know if any of the corporations do that, but I should like to see something like that done. Well, that's it for now, but I'll think of some more.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure, I hope you do. Thank you.
Hi, Aaron Aiken from Grayling. I have a question. This is concerning children that are taken into custody through the state who receive money from corporation and that are set aside for them. And these children that are living in foster home have no land or native allotment. What's going to happen to them when once they get of age? Are they going to float around with nothing?
Well, if they if those children are over 13 and a half years old, then they will have shares that are held for them until they become of age. If they are children who are under 13 and a half years of age and don't have shares, then if their parents were to leave them shares, they would be entitled to keep those shares, and their foster parents can't take the shares. In other words, nobody can take those shares from a native person until 1991, when a native person can sell his or her shares. But the fact that someone is taken into custody by the child welfare people and placed in a foster home doesn't affect that child's right to his or her shares.
You know, in the past, there were children that were taken. Some are never returned back to their, you know, to their village or even know where they came from.
Well, those children, you mean children might be placed in foster homes with non-native families,
right,
or even put out for adoption with non-native families.
Right.
Well, those children are still entitled to their shares, and their foster parents or their adoptive parents would be advised in the normal course of events that these children have an interest in the corporation, that and when they come of age, they should be entitled to it. Now, that's an obligation of the foster parents and the child welfare authorities, and whether they're carrying out that obligation, I don't know. But that's
okay,
what they would
say. And the thing I'm concerned about is because of about a couple, I think, that has been adopted, and I was wondering if there are ways to contact these children.
You'd have to get in touch with the child welfare people and see what they have to say about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yes.
I have a question. You told the lady that these children in foster homes are entitled to their shares. Is that if their parents had applied for them in 71?
Yes, if the children, well, December 18th, 1971 was about 13 and a half years ago. So the children who were born before December 18th, 1971, if their parents enrolled them, would have shares. That's my point. Yes.
That's what I was talking about kids that weren't enrolled. Would they ever bring this up again, or?
Well, you've brought it up.
I mean, would you know, would it become law again, is what I mean?
Well, Mrs. Johnson, the role is closed now, but I'm here to listen to you, and you've brought the subject up, and you obviously feel that something should be done about those children who were left out. Well, that's what I want to know, because in my report, it means that I may be in a position to recommend something be done about that. But I just want to know what your concerns are, and then when I write my report, I will say, well, this is what the people said, so here's what I think we've got to do to sort this out. Because the trouble with these pauses is that I usually fill them up by doing a lot of talking, but we've been all over the state, and we've heard from people in an awful lot of places, and a lot of people are dissatisfied with the land claim settlement. Some of them say, well, the answer is sovereignty. Some say, no, the answer is to strengthen the corporations and make sure nobody can sell their shares. Some people say, some Native people say, they're a minority, but some of them say, well, let's just sell our shares in 1991. At least we'll get the money. And if we don't have the land, well, maybe we can all move to town.
Well, in your report there...
Do you want to come up here and sit here so we get what you say down on the...
I'm just curious.
In your report, if you give your report, will they listen to you?
Well, that's something I can't foretell.
Oh.
But I'm writing a report for Alaska Native people. And if they agree with what's in my report, people down here in the Yukon Delta and people in the southeast Alaska and people on the North Slope, people in Anchorage and Fairbanks, if they all think that my report is sound, that is, it's really and truly based on what Native people told me, then it's up to you. You can take my report and go to Congress and say, look, this guy went all over Alaska, listened to everybody, here's what we told him, here's what he said, now can we have this amendment or that amendment or will this change in policy or that change in policy or do this or do that. But I certainly can't promise that anybody will listen. I'm here to listen to you, and through me, maybe others will listen to what you have to say. But nobody can wave a magic wand and say, okay, it's all changed, it's all okay now.
Okay. I'm Frieda Walton from Anvik. I have a question. If I make up my will statement and I give my shares to my children, and if my corporation has any dividends to give out and I die, do my children get those dividends?
Yes. After you die, they get the dividends.
Oh, okay. And so, and they just get it till they die?
Yeah. Or they might sell their shares after 1991.
Mm-hmm.
And then whoever they sell the shares to owns the shares, and that person then gets the dividends.
So the children born after 1971, then their participation is just receiving dividends and or our lands after we're gone? I mean, that's their participation,
that's
or they don't have...
Well, let's say you have children born since 1971.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they're not shareholders.
Right.
Now, if you die, you would leave 100 shares in your village corporation to your children. And maybe you have five children, so each would get 20 shares. Somebody else might have only one child, leave all his shares to that one child, that one child would have 100 shares. So your five children would share the dividends. That one child over there would get the complete dividend, would get all the dividends. And that's one of the things that you can now see with ANCSA is that because some people have larger families than others, the children in the larger families receive fewer shares than the children in the small families. So that you're getting unequal distribution of shares already, and that will and that concerns some people because they think everybody should hold shares on an equal basis. But that isn't the way Congress set it up. They said, no, we're going to do it this way. But anyway, your children would share the dividends among themselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
I'm Hamilton Hamilton, IRA chief from Shagluck. I don't know how to explain this, to ask a question, but I'll try. Where does the IRA stand for when 1991 rule apparently?
Well, when Congress made the land claim settlement back in 1971, they said, we're going to keep the IRA councils right out of this. And you see, Congress could have said in 1971, we'll give the land to the IRA councils, and we'll give the money to the IRA councils, to the traditional councils, tribal governments, whatever. But they didn't. They said, no, we don't want the IRA councils to be any part of this, so we're going to give the land to the corporations. So corporations were set up. Now, what some people are proposing today is this. They say, look, we native people control the corporations. We're worried that after 1991, the corporations and the land might fall into non-native hands, so we're going to transfer the land from the corporation to the IRA council. And that way, all the people in the village would share equally. They couldn't sell their interest in the land, and the land wouldn't be taxable. Now, that's what a lot of people are saying as we go from one village to another. But Congress never intended that the IRA council should be involved in this settlement. Now we are finding that people around the state are saying, well, maybe we better get the IRA councils involved in this, because if they hold the land, nobody can take it from us. Now, that's what they're saying, some of them. Some people reject that. They say, no, we don't want IRA councils. Let's keep the corporations. Well, I'm here to find out what you think.
And I got one more for myself to, in a way that I was kind of worried about 1991 about the trap lines too. You know. I'm a trapper in the winter time. They gave us 160 acres to take all land, you know, land claim. And, I was kind of worried about it because they might not let us trap in some other land.
Well, if you have a native allotment of 160 acres, that nobody can take that away from you. If you received a native allotment of 160 acres, that's yours. That doesn't belong to the corporations. That's nothing to do with land claims, and nobody can take that away from you. So if you happen to have a native allotment, well, that's a good thing for you, because the allotments are safe.
Are we going to stay on the 160 acres, or could we trap off that 60 acres?
Well, if you're trapping on land that belongs to the corporations now, and that land is land that after 1991 is held by non-natives, then you might not be able to trap on it. But that's a good point. That's where the two fit together, the allotments and the land claims. Now, people around the state who are engaged in subsistence hunting and fishing and who are engaged in trapping, they're very concerned about the land and about keeping the land after 1991.
Sorry.
Maybe some of you could think about a question that people are asking. Most of you hold shares in the corporations. You've got 100 shares in your village corporation and 100 shares in Doyon. In 1991, do you want to be able to sell your shares? If you sell them, you might get some money for them, but if enough people sell their shares to non-natives, then your own village corporation would no longer be a native corporation. Doyon would no longer be a native corporation. The land would no longer be native land, so that in a sense you have, in 1991, you have to choose whether you want the land or the money. Well, that's the question that Frieda Walton asked, was whether, if that happens, will they put us on reservations? I don't know. They might say, well, you had your shares, that's what you got under the settlement, you sold them, you got the money, so you don't get anything more. But a lot of this is really up to you to decide where you're going to go, what you think is important. Is keeping the land so important? Is subsistence important? Or is it more important to get some money in 1991? If you sell your shares, you might get some money for them. That's the argument.
If we sold our stock, would we be native?
The question is, if we sold our stock, would we still be natives? Well, I think that's up to you. Being a native doesn't depend on whether you've got a piece of paper, I shouldn't think. It depends on your birth and your blood and your family. That's up to you. Yes, Ms. Johnson.
What are ways that we could do to prevent from losing our land?
Well, Mrs. Johnson asks the question, what are the ways in which we could make sure we don't lose our land? Well, if the settlement isn't changed at all, in 1991, you can sell your shares. Well, if everybody decides, no, we're going to keep our shares, we're not going to sell them, then you won't lose your land. Now, that's one thing. After 1991, the state could tax your land. So if you, you'd have to raise the money to pay the taxes then to keep the land. And of course, if the corporations go into debt, go bankrupt, then the people they owe money to would be entitled to take the land or some of it. Now, it seems that there are a lot of problems here, and even if you decide, well, we're not going to sell your shares, we're not going to sell our shares, well, you might still, the corporations might still lose the land. Not all of it, but they might lose some of it. So those are real problems, and it's because all these problems are built into the land claim settlement that I was asked to come out here well ahead of time. You know, it's not 1991 yet, it's only 1984, but they said, let's look into this with a lot ahead of time to see if we can sort it out. I know this sounds complicated, and it is, but I'm trying to make it as simple as I can.
Well, how do we go about the corporation then to be aware of 1991 or